all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so very special. Our town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. Despite the profound changes of the pandemic, it seems like life goes on in Port Townsend pretty much the same way it always has. Jefferson County still teems with deer, otter, and even magnificent soaring eagles. Have you seen your friends lately? Or do you even still have friends after almost 2 years of pandemic-induced solitary confinement? And what about new friends? Have you met any interesting people lately? And have you taken time to find out all about them? Even before the pandemic, this show, Our Town, had a mission. That mission is to introduce our listeners to some of the fascinating people who make up the complex fabric of this community. Listening to Our Town lets you meet some of the vibrant, complex characters who help give this community its unique personality. Our Town is a window on the people of Jefferson County, Washington. My guest today is Colin Foden, a man who was one of the four-person team that conceptualized and ultimately gave birth to this radio station. KPTZ was the brainchild of Colin and his colleagues. As you might guess, birthing a radio station is not an easy matter, but there's more to Colin than just a radio station, as you will soon hear. So, Colin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Marianne. Good to be here.
Okay, I always start the show the same way by asking whether you were born and grew up on the Olympic Peninsula. But the minute you open your mouth, I'm sure people can figure out immediately that your accent is not exactly from around here. So where did you begin your journey?
Oh, England, in the northwest of England.
Okay. And what's your family background? What did your folks do?
Well, they've passed away now, but my father was had his own business in the end, but he was a director of a blind company.
Okay.
Not one that staggers around not being able to see. But
yes, the window kind of
window blind, yes. I'm one of two children.
Okay. Are you the older or the younger?
I'm the older.
Okay. Now, usually I ask my guests about their high school experience because in this country, it's a very crucial and formative time. Now, I don't know much about the British education system, but I am aware it's different. So what we call high school isn't exactly the same over there. And the labels don't matter that much, but I'm just sort of interested in your young teenage years. So let's say from the ages of 14 to 16. What did your peers think of you? What do you think? How do you think they would label you? Not what you labeled you, but how would they label you?
I don't know. Never stopped long enough to ask them, I suppose. I don't know what they would say of me. I think it's probably, I played a lot of sport.
Yes.
So I was a soccer player, and so that put me in one group of people.
The jocks.
The jocks. Tend to think of them as jocks. They're not.
But they are.
Muscle-bound.
Hooligans, too.
What did Woody Allen call it? With long arms and hairy knuckles.
Yes. Okay. So you weren't real academically prone?
I was okay academically, but I was not academically prone.
Okay.
That's true.
Well, that's often true. Cool. How old were you when you left school?
When I left grammar school, I was probably 17, 16, 17.
Okay.
Yeah.
As I say, the terminology is different because here, grammar school, you leave when you're 13.
The terminology is different. But it's also changed in England, too. I mean, when I was in England, you had to pass an exam to get into grammar school.
Right.
Otherwise, you were shepherded down a different road.
Different path, yeah. Well, so you were 17, and what did you decide to do? Were you one of these kids that had it all figured out? I'm going to be an XYZ?
Yes, I decided I was going to be an XYZ. No, I didn't have it all figured out at all. I had a sense of adventure, but nothing really figured out. In fact, my family background is not one of sort of academic success, so I was pretty much left up to my own. I did go to college in England for a while as a part of the Manchester University system, but it was a building college, and it was designed to train people to be quantity surveyors and things like that.
Okay, and we usually call it real job. What was your first real job?
My first real job
when you got out
was with IBM.
IBM.
UK.
Okay.
when I say my first real job after leaving school,
right,
I had been up at 4 o'clock in the morning regularly delivering milk before that. That was youthful folly.
Yeah, well, got to make some money somehow when you're a kid.
Well, absolutely. It's the money I made from, yes, it helped a lot.
So what did you do for IBM in the beginning?
Oh, gosh, I was just a sort of a clerk. You know, I just took in boxes of punch cards and sent them out again and things like that. I wasn't very sophisticated. But eventually, I worked for a service bureau.
Didn't you tell me you got married quite young?
I did. I was about 19 when I got married, 1920.
That is pretty young. And was she also an IBM person?
She was, yes.
Okay, and did you two work there together for many, many years?
No, not for many, many years. No, in fact, we decided that maybe England wasn't for us, and we decided to go to New Zealand. So we emigrated to New Zealand.
Had either of you ever been there before you'd made
no.
that decision?
No, okay. No. And in fact, when we were looking, I mean, it just sounds so romantic.
Right.
Nestled in the South Pacific, you know.
It does.
But the photographs that were of New Zealand were all grainy, black and white. And they were mostly of Polynesians, of Maoris and people like that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, which I thought, oh, we'll fit in well there.
Well, so did you have anything lined up as jobs when you got to New Zealand?
No, basically we took a cruise ship, the Monarch, the Ocean Monarch, went around the islands.
Have been fun.
Oh, it was wonderful. Yeah, it was very exciting. And when we docked in Auckland in New Zealand, got off and went to find somewhere to stay.
Right.
And there was a motel there, and it was overlooking a soccer field. Well, and I thought, this is okay.
I like this, the soccer. Okay, and what did you find out in terms of a job? Did you land something pretty quick?
It was fairly quick, yes. I didn't have too much trouble finding a job.
Okay.
Yeah. Because IBM in those days was like a university in a sense, because the training you got from IBM was applicable, you know.
Could use a number of places.
Yeah.
And so how long did you stay in New Zealand?
About 6 years.
And then what?
We separated. Mm-hmm. I went from New Zealand to the United States, to the West Coast.
Was that difficult in terms of paperwork, that kind of stuff?
No, it didn't turn out to be that way. No, I mean, it would be today.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. All right, so you get to the West Coast of the U.S.,
uh-huh.
And then what? What did you do?
Well, I went looking for a job.
Same wise decision.
Yes, well, it turned out to be. And I went to work for a large financial services company in their IT department called Pacific Life.
Right. I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're a big company. And I basically just worked my way through the ranks of Pacific Life, ended up as a vice president, and that was that. I was located in Newport Beach.
Oh, this is nice.
This is very nice. Yeah, I don't think I realized at the time how nice it was.
Yeah. You know? And didn't you tell me that they actually sent you to Pepperdine to get an MBA?
They did. They sent me to Pepperdine. And I think they had eye on my future, and thought I was going to be more than I turned out to be, let's put it that way.
Well, an MBA is considered a very good credential in American society.
I think so, and Pepperdine is a particularly good school. Somebody, the person above me, said, you've got to think about this company as your oyster. You will get whatever you need from the company. But I left after a while. But it was about 14 or 15 years before I left.
And you were a vice president by then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And why did you decide to leave IBM?
Pacific Life. First of all, I connected with another partner, and we had our first child. And she was a bit of an adventurer too. So we decided to buy a VW van and head north,
which
we did. It was a sort of plan. And I regret the money side of not working for Pacific Life anymore, you know, with 5 weeks of paid vacation.
That's pretty nice.
You know, all sorts of other things, other bonuses, which were nice. But I never regretted moving up to Port Townsend.
So why Port Townsend? How did you end up here?
I had some friends who moved here.
Ah, okay.
And I came to visit just to check it out. I must admit, I got off the plane at Tacoma, at SeaTac, rented a car, and seemed to drive forever to get to Port Townsend. It was the longest drive I remember at the time.
Well, wait a minute. I'm confused. I thought you were in a VW bus.
Oh, no, that
camper
was,
coming
that was,
up.
That was earlier. Yes, we come up here in a VW bus.
But you mean you made a visit first?
But before coming to Port Townsend, I made a visit first, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
That put it on the radar for us.
Right, okay. And then you arrive here in your VW and look around.
I just looked around and, yeah, I don't know why I didn't have the nerves about getting work or getting a job, but I didn't seem to.
And what year was that? So 1992, I would
yeah,
think.
Yeah, 1992, that's right.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, not being rolling in money, you had to seek employment here in Port Townsend. And what did you come up with?
Well, I started doing consulting work based on my MBA, and I'd always planned to consult with nonprofits. I ran the United Way campaign at Pacific Life and things like that. So I believe in giving back, and the nonprofits do a wonderful job. So I thought I'd help them. And so I was vice president, I was chair of the co-op board. And basically that was it. Once I looked around and I found a greeting card distribution company above Aldrich's.
Uh-huh.
The top floor where Aldrich's was all boxes of greeting cards.
Interesting.
Yes.
It's and been through a lot of different phases.
Yes. And I had a line of cards myself. I'd done a card, and I thought this would be a good opportunity to see about getting some distributed.
The business side of it, but you also worked for Centrum.
I did. That was my next job.
After the greeting cards.
Yeah, there was an ad in the paper for somebody to run the finances for Centrum.
Well, that sounds perfect for your
it
background.
It was. Yeah, it worked out well. It worked out really well, and I just loved working at Centrum. I've got greatest respect for them as an organization. I lived down on Monroe Street, and I could go down to Chetsumoko, go through and along the beach to work. And I thought, this is it. I've arrived.
That's perfect.
Yes,
except
absolutely.
For during nasty weather, that might be. You know,
well, like, and when the tide's in.
Yeah, you did have to pay attention to some of that. I know you told me you did a number of things at Centrum. Can you go through some of the things you worked on?
Oh, well, one of the things I did was to teach everybody project management, because although I'm not sure how successful that was, but always run into problems with trying to manage the resources to get to put workshops on or whatever it was that we were doing. I trained a lot of people in project management, but mostly I was, and I did some strategic planning. My MBA, by the way, the emphasis was on strategic planning. So whenever I went into anywhere, I would look for an opening to help them do their strategic planning.
Okay.
And that's what happens with a lot of nonprofits. You go in and you say, you know, where's your strategic plan? And they say, well, we haven't got one.
Right.
Okay. Right, that's where we start.
Yeah, we want to get money to X, but the plan on how we're going to do it is a little fuzzy.
Yeah, a little, well, definitely fuzzy.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that sounds like it would suit you perfectly. Why did you not stay there and for a long, long time?
Well, I had a second child.
Uh-huh.
And my partner at the time and I split up, and I was taking the lion's share of the child rearing.
Ah.
And I would get into situations that where I would have to work late at night.
Yeah, certainly when Centrum had events and things.
Oh yeah, yeah. One day I went out and I left the kids at home, and they weren't very old. And I thought, I just can't do this. I mean, apart from anything else, it might well be illegal, but I can't be worrying about them and doing my job as well. So I decided at that point to stay home and quit work as we define it today. And so I'd pick up the odd consulting job and things like that. But basically, the kids were the priority.
Well, certainly going back to the 90s, there wasn't the amount of opening for working remotely that there is today.
Oh, no, it's quite different.
You know, a whole different environment.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were basically taking care of the kids as your priority.
Yes.
And doing some work on the side.
Yeah, that's right.
And so in time, we're moving up to the point at which somehow you became involved in the startup of this radio station, KPTZ.
Yes.
So how did it happen? What's the story? How did you personally get involved? Set the scene for us.
It was synchronicity, I suppose. I was in Swains one day, just wandering around, minding my own business.
Right.
And I ran into an old friend, Sherry Jones.
Okay.
And she said that, did I know that there was a radio license becoming available? And would I be interested in helping build a radio station? And I'd never built a radio station or done anything like it before, really.
Right.
I was able to apply my business side of things to the process.
Okay. Well, there were four people involved at the real start. What are the other two? What are their names, the other two?
Anne Katzenbach was one. And she was the person who knew everybody in town.
Okay.
Which is very helpful when we're trying to raise money.
Right.
And Colin Brown, he was another person who's well-known around town and helped raise a lot of money.
Okay, well, I did a cheat sheet thing. I looked on KPTZ's website to get some of the dates, so I know that in 2007, August 2007, you incorporated as a nonprofit organization.
Yes, that's right.
So that would have been sort of the real inception of things.
Yes.
And then in 2008, you got a license to construct within 3 years.
That's right.
And the original board was the four of you.
Uh-huh.
And so you were, you know, spinning your little wheels trying to get money, I presume, was your real priority.
Well, it, a lot of things.
Yeah, okay. What were you doing?
Building an organization, basically.
Right.
And Larry Stein fortunately joined us.
Right.
I think we ran into him at the farmer's market because we had these little radio hats, so we were trying to raise money, you know,
right.
And small face.
Larry Stein, for people, listeners that don't know Larry's background, had about 30 years experience in community radio.
Exactly.
So he became not only a board member and everything, but he director of programming. And you also pretty quickly added some engineering skills. Who was that?
I was Bill Putney.
Okay.
A wonderful, wonderful engineer. And went and did all the engineering for us. So he was responsible for getting the tower in place and modifying the antenna to meet the needs.
Well, both of those guys brought some much-needed skills. You, the original four, had brilliant ideas, but it sounds like not a lot of technical know-how as to how to take your idea to market.
Right. Well, we knew how to take them. I mean, I knew how to take the idea to market. What we were short of were people who knew the technologies of radio.
Yeah, okay.
And that Larry came with the programming knowledge, and Bill came with the engineering knowledge. And I have to say that the one thing about the station is that whenever we needed somebody, and this sounds really hokey, but whenever we needed somebody, they virtually always walk through the door. And it's just unbelievable. It was like, build it and they'll come. So that happened with Bill Putney, and it happened with Larry Stein to some extent.
Okay, now the radio station did not actually get on the air until 2011.
That's correct.
Okay, during that startup period, which I'm loosely defining as 2007 to 2011, uh-huh. Were there any crises that made you really wonder, oh my God, can we really do this?
Oh, no more than one a day.
Yeah. Okay, well, name a biggie.
Well, the biggies were somebody else took our call sign, our address on the frequency on the dial, and so that was a crisis for a while because we had to re-engineer the transmitter.
Right.
We were really doing everything. I mean, we were managing volunteers, of which there were many. I mean, I figured at some one point that about 200 volunteers had come through the station at one point.
Well, there was a lot on your plate, but didn't one of the original co-founders drop out even before launching the station?
Sherry Jones did, yeah. I think she saw what was coming ahead, you know, the amount of I wouldn't say the amount of work, but the complexities of coming right. here. And it was, she didn't want to be do that. So she left.
That would be complex for you guys to pick up.
It was. I stepped into the president position. We put the other people on the board, like Bill and Larry. And we sort of restructured the place. But it was a shock at the time. And I'm sure she had a good reason. And it all worked out in the end. But it was a lot of work.
So when you went live, what was the vision? What was the sort of the mission? What was the station supposed to be?
We didn't want to sort of announce this in a sense, but we were pretty much Port Townsend-centric. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted it to reflect Port Townsend. And so we put out a competition to our friends and donors mostly, and said, what expression would we use to describe a radio station in Port Townsend? And eclectic was a word that came up, and community radio was another word that, another couple of words that came up. We developed our strategy around that, much against the advice of most of the experts in the business that say, eclectic doesn't work. You know, you've got to be you have to have an identity of some sort. You're a jazz station or a classical station. But no, we knew better.
Okay, and you stuck to it. I mean, I think it still defines KPTZ.
Absolutely, it is. And I think it represents Port Townsend in a way like that. I think we're pretty diverse. I mean, perhaps not culturally, but taste-wise, we're a pretty diverse
right.
city.
So the station went live in 2011, so we're just a little bit past the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
And you were president and chairman of the board for that period. Mm-hmm. I know you resigned a little while ago, mm-hmm. But looking back over the decade plus, what do you see as the accomplishments, broad stroke?
Is it the first 10 years or the subsequent 10 years?
The whole period of time, what do you think?
Well, I think what's happened is that we stayed fairly true to our principles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like a volunteerism, for example. And they turned out to be good principles. So I think the major accomplishment was keeping those in, keeping aligned to the principles. Raising enough money consistently to keep going, you know. Essential part of nonprofit work is raising the money. The programming, I think, the problem about eclectic is you can't please all of the people all of the time. You have to, you know, you have to have certain segments that please certain thing people. And I think that's happened. One of the major accomplishments is the disaster planning of the station.
Right.
Which has proved to be really valuable during the pandemic.
That's true.
Saw ourselves as a partner. We partnered with the emergency center here, the operations center, and we actually have a studio in the emergency room.
Right.
So if the worst comes to the worst, people, we can get the word out from there.
So we're prepared for, let's say, an earthquake or whatever.
Yes, that's right.
Disaster. But it's been very useful during the pandemic in terms of keeping tabs on what's happening in this.
Yeah, and we never anticipated that.
No, it wasn't part of the plan.
No. But if you, I think what I do believe, and I think I got this from my MBA, is that if you have got things right, you'll probably be able to accomplish whatever you set out to do, and you'll be able to adapt to whatever changes take place. And I think if I look back with any level of satisfaction, it's the fact that we got a lot of things right. We got things wrong too, but basically the station retained its character and serviced, you know, it was a service to the community,
right?
Which is what we wanted.
And I think at this point, KPTZ is sort of firmly established as part of the fabric of Port Townsend.
I think that's true.
And I think all of us at the station, but all of the listeners want to thank you and the original founders for sticking with it and making this something. And you in particular have worked untold hours to create this station, and I just want to say we want to thank you, and I also want to say we're out of time. You have many more amazing stories about the birth and growth of KPTZ, and for listeners who don't know about this, we are still having our world headquarters in the trailer at Mountain View School, but we are soon going to move, I say soon, maybe loosely, to new quarters at Fort Worden, and we will have a real grown-up radio station with soundproof booths and things like that, so stay tuned. So thank you, Colin, for being on the show. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Mary Ann McNellis. My guest today has been Colin Foden, former chairman of the board and co-founder of this station. Thanks again, Colin. It's wonderful getting a view of the station through its formative years. In addition to thanking Colin for being a guest on the show, I also want to thank Sunny Flores, the editor and producer of Our Town. Sunny's going to use digital magic, his ear and his fingers, to edit Our Town. His editing skills will make us sound ever so intelligent, much more eloquent than we really are. He will iron out our verbal mumbles and jumbles. I want to thank you, the listener, for sticking with us through the pandemic. We're all limping through this COVID crisis together. Many of us now have a third shot, a booster. So sometimes I feel like we're playing that old game of whack-a-mole. You know, the mole sticks up his head and you slap it down. You look across the yard, there's another one. Slap, whack, whack. And we're whacking down mutated virus now. Hopefully at some point it will slow down, perhaps even to a screeching halt. Don't give up hope. We'll get through this. Meanwhile, keep listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM. We're a community radio station by and for the people of Jefferson County. Just like you, all of us at KPTZ would really like to return to some form of normal. So listeners, stay safe, stay healthy. The show is called Our Town. I'm Mary Ann McNellis signing off for today. But please keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Mary Ann McNellis and edited by Sunny Flores.